ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Warwick's Weekly Wrap.
Warwick Hadfield joins us once again for a look at the sporting week. Warwick, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Good evening to you too, Phil.
Well, there's only one event today, isn't it? The Melbourne Cup. Actually, we talked a lot last night about half yours, but it has become the 13th horse to complete the famed double, the Caulfield Cup and the Melbourne Cup. But jockey Jamie Mellum, of course, was Jamie Carr to many punters, has joined Michelle Payne as one of two female jockeys and the only woman to win the Caulfield Cup, Melbourne Cup double. Yeah. She's her life changed right there and then on the winning post, I would think, didn't it?
Well, you can tell you for sure that I had to go and interview Michelle Payne not that long ago, and this dirty, great, big black Porsche took away all the sunshine. And before she won the Melbourne Cup, I think she got round in something a bit more humble than that. And for Jamie Mellum, yeah, look, her life's going to change now. She's now a Melbourne Cup winning jockey. I mean, they make movies about these things, don't they?
They do. Here she is after the race.
What just happened? Oh, my God. This is what we do it for. This is why we get up out of bed every morning, 4 a.m, work our asses off for the last 15 years I've been in this industry. It's tough. It's not all glorious and perfect as everyone can see sometimes. Oh, I've had an amazing year. Got married, had some really great days on the track, but nothing ever compares to this feeling right now I'm feeling. Look, we've got Cole up there, who him and Denise bred this horse, done an incredible job with him, obviously. I have to mention my grandpa, he died last week. The last thing he watched was the Caulfield Cup, and he was such a big supporter of mine, so he's up there opening those gaps for me because I needed a few gaps opened then.
Yeah, what a win. It was very emotional. And gee, rightly so. It's the horse was the only Australian bred horse in the race, Warwick.
That was the other. I mean, the Melbourne Cup always throws up great yarns. Yeah. That's one thing for sure. And yeah, that's just one of them. But what is about these female jockeys? They're all potty mouth asses. And because Michelle Payne.
Come on, it's all right.
She told someone to get stuffed, didn't she?
She did. So she should.
Yeah, well, look, the interesting thing is, and Michelle Payne's been very strong on this in the last little while. The industry changed, and she helped change it with that race a decade ago. Mm. There are now more female apprentices than there are male apprentices in the sport, which is an extraordinary turnaround. Because you know, when I sat down to talk to Michelle Payne a few years ago, she told me, you know, there were so many men who believed that women shouldn't be involved in the industry, and it's quite a turnaround to have Jamie Carr do this and to make it very clear that, well, I mean, she understands. She's been, there are photos of her doing the rounds in the last few weeks of her sleeping with ponies as a young girl and in the saddle when she was barely able to walk. And she's just grown as this person who understands a horse. And the way she talked about this horse, it was very obviously there's a very, very powerful relationship. And I think she knew, if you listen to more of her comments, she held the horse back. She said even before the race, she just wanted to keep him quiet for as long as possible. And then she knew, and the horse knew, that there was not this nonsense of staying quiet was over. She found a couple of gaps, one of them going past her husband, Ben.
Yeah.
And that was a very narrow gap. She apparently said, whether this will become part of apocryphal or not, she just basically said, get out of my way, Ben. And he obliged. Apparently, there's also another joke about the prize money. It's not just half yours, it's all mine. things like that. It seems to be, I mean, they've only been married this year and it seems all wonderful, and she said it's, as you just heard, you know, it's been a great year for her.
Well, it's a good payday too, isn't it? I mean, what's a jockey get? Do they get 5%, 10% of the?
When they win the Melbourne Cup, more than that's thrown at them. And as you know, as I just indicated with the Michelle Payne story, I think you're driving a bit more than a Beetle, an old VW or anything. And from now on, she'll be getting around in something a bit special. And you know, I mean, she'll still have to work. She'll still have to get up at 4 a.m. But she'll be set up for life, and no doubt, like Michelle Payne and plenty of other jockeys, she'll be owning. In fact, they do own a racing setup already, her and her husband. So, It sets you up for life. As I said, you know, they make movies about it. And I reckon there's a great story here. Now, look, just remembering, 2 years ago, she was in an induced coma after a terrible fall.
Mm.
So I can see someone grabbing the movie rights right now. And to have done the double hasn't been done for a while. In fact, it hadn't been done for so long, you know, we'd almost forgot about the
half,
double.
Half Yours is apparently the first Australian bred winner of the Caulfield and Melbourne Cup double since 1939.
Mm, that's right. It's, you know, I mean, look, the foreign netties have been coming for a while here now. So, and, you know, there was Germany was represented, Japan, USA, obviously
the
Ireland.
It was the only Australian bred horse in the race.
That's right.
I find that incredible, actually. But anyway, I don't know anything about horse racing.
Well, $10 million. There's $10 million in prize money. And I got into a taxi in Germany this time last year. And the taxi driver knew all about the Melbourne Cup in Frankfurt. Which is, you know, he's sort of thinking, wow, this horse race. I mean, and because we have the agitprop coming out of Sydney, of course, that people aren't as interested in the Melbourne Cup as they used to be. And
is that right? What do you think about that? Is that right? There's some argument for that people...
Well, they reckon 80,000.
Went to the track. Yeah.
When the weather in Melbourne has been atrocious, I mean, I've had to pick my moments today to walk my dogs because it's coming through in scuds from the Western District as it does in this part of the world. And when it comes down, it comes down. So a lot of people would have been wearing their stiletto-heeled gumboots at Flemington today. And the television ratings will be one of the critical factors. They've dropped off and started to, last year apparently they went up again. I'm loving the fact that a politician's complaining he had to work today because he couldn't go to the Melbourne Cup.
Get the sense I've been broadcasting for a long time. Yeah, and years ago there was a kind of feeling that everyone did stop for the Melbourne Cup. I'm not sure that still happens.
Do you think in offices, you know, around Australia, people pause for about 3 minutes and 20 seconds?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't, you know, I mean, what can you say? We can't go into every living room and know. I mean, the stats will, in the end, the stats will tell it. We'll get a turnover on betting. We'll get the television ratings and, as I say, the crowd. It looked a pretty big crowd and, you know, at that crowd would have been attracted despite the possibility of some terrible, terrible weather. I think it's about 15 degrees.
Hmm.
You know, it's not the
greatest
weather.
I was getting complaints last night when we were talking about the cup that it's a handicap race, which purists were saying that ain't the best form of horse race.
No,
the Cox Plate's the only
race. The Cox Plate, Wait For Age.
That Wait For Age is the only fair way to have to run a horse race. What's the Hadfield view here?
Oh well, I always smiled when I read the Clive James view. Australia's the only country in the world where they go out and find the best 24 horses, then try to stop them winning. You know, and it's a bit like that. But these things come about, and they bring with them their mythology. And you know how much LKS McKinnon weighted down Farlap way back in the 1930s, and all those stories. They all become part of our folklore. And talking of Farlap, there's a lovely story that I have got to be became aware of because I'm now living in Geelong. It's the story of Briseis, who won the Melbourne Cup in 1876.
Yes. I told you that Warwick had a long memory. But
well, it's a great story because Farlap had to be hidden at St Albans because of death threats in the 1930s. And St Albans Park is famous for having bred Briseis, but it's all more famous for the fact that this little baby was left on the doorstep of the farm manager's house. His wife went out and they found this baby being left there. They took him in. They didn't know what to call him, didn't know anything about him at all, never found out very much about him at all, but they decided to call him Peter St Albans. And as an 11-year-old... he rode the winner of the Melbourne Cup, Briseis. The regular jockey was unable to ride. This young fellow left in the stud farm, grew up with horses, grew to love them, and his record is never going to be beaten. No 11-year-old's ever going to ride the Melbourne Cup. They formally submitted that he was 14 years of age, but it eventually emerged that he was just...
only 11 years old.
Only 11 years old.
Wow.
So he didn't have to sit in the sauna for a very long...
Wow. Well, I am in awe of them, and Jamie Mellum, Nee Carr as well, because such an extraordinary, it's a phenomenally dangerous occupation.
And she acknowledged that the sport has a lot of critics these days about animal welfare and also jockey welfare.
I mean, and with some justification.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's been all sorts of reports into bullying. Right. The trainer of Pride of Penzance ended up in an awful lot of trouble, which we conveniently forget about, I think, when we talk about Michelle Payne, because we don't want to take that moment away from her. But her trainer was, booted out of the industry, really. Mm. So, you know, it's not perfect, and that's exactly what Jamie Mellum said. It's, you know, we know that the industry's not perfect, but it's a look. I mean, the first horse race in Australia officially sanctioned anyway was 1810. The horses apparently that came with the first fleet didn't want to race them, so they in fact they seven got off the first fleet and four were dead not too long afterwards. So they were very precious things. But by about 1810, there were enough horses in the colony to have a horse race. And it was sanctioned by Macquarie. And then as you look around the nation, every little town that popped up all over the colonialist part of Australia, what did they do? One of the first things they did, they built a racetrack. It's deeply ingrained into the Australian psyche, horse racing. And, you know, the industry needs to do a lot better in some areas, that's for sure. There's no doubt about that. But it's part and parcel of Australia, and I don't think you can ever push back on that.
Nope. All right, take your cap off to her, I guess. Jamie, take your helmet off.
Yeah. She threw her goggles into the crowd and then she threw her gloves into the crowd. Just the little things they do as they go back to the mounting yard, and you know, there were tears everywhere. She embraced Michelle Payne. And look, I've been in that mounting yard, went at the end of a Melbourne Cup, and it is an incredibly emotional time, particularly for the connections. Although no one ever bothers to go and interview the connections of those horses Buckaroo finished stone last. He's actually under veterinary examination right now. And there was a horse that died, and I went to that stall and I wrote my story for my newspaper based on that. And boy, that was an emotional thing too. The trainers, they were just bawling their eyes out. So there's a great the horses are looked after.
Up to a point.
It's what happens to the horses
afterwards.
That don't go round. Aren't successful.
Well, as we know, and their fate is pretty grim.
Yep.
All right, to the footy field. Reece Walsh, can he achieve anything more? Two electrifying performance of the Kangaroos and the Ashes. They sound as though they're having a nice tour. No, the end of season tour is a bit of a romp, isn't it? Anyway, but is there some talk of a code switch? That's not true, is it?
Well, it's speculation based on, you know, a couple of interesting things. Number one, as we've talked about this 1,000 times, rugby league is confined to the eastern seaboard of Australia, give or take North Sydney and what might be happening in Papua New Guinea, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. But it's basically that. It's confined to basically the two or three counties in the north of England. And what they're saying, well, number one, there are rugby union people who are what you might call them influencers, who have podcasts and so on. They're saying to Rugby Australia, throw open the checkbook, go and get him, he's the greatest thing ever. And people are all in rugby league are saying, we're going to be very, very careful, because this young man with all his talent can see that if he stays in rugby league, he's going to be famous in this very, very narrow field.
Yeah.
If he went to rugby union, which is a truly global sport, and when it holds a World Cup, it's a genuine World Cup, he could earn a lot more money. And whether it's about money or whether it's about something else, that's for only Reece Walsh right now. But they need to be aware. And of course, no doubt, if it's going to happen, Rugby 360 might also come around
if if that happens. That seems to be dead, doesn't it? Or not? Maybe it's not.
Well, who knows? I mean, these things come, it'll pop its head up again. I mean, you know, Pappenhuyzen's taken a break from Melbourne Storm. What's he doing? Is he looking for another club elsewhere? Is he going to go and play with in Perth?
Mm.
It's a big thing to suddenly, as a 27-year-old, say, I'm taking a sabbatical. I mean, it doesn't really happen in rugby league unless you've got, I don't know, you never resign from one job unless you've got another one to go to.
By the way, why do they call this rugby league thing the Ashes? That's just what's going on there?
Well, no, it's been the Ashes, well, certainly since 1928, when there was a cup given to the winner in 1928, which had written on the side of the cup, the Rugby League Ashes.
Oh, okay.
And mention of the Ashes, it's derivative, of course, from the cricket Ashes.
Yeah.
And there is also an Ashes in association football, in soccer, but that's of course, as I say,
okay. Right.
It was derivative from 1877. So these two coaches who coached Australia and New Zealand in soccer, they smoked a cigar at the end of the match and they put the ash and the cigar into a little container. And Football Australia's revived it. That was in 1920, I think it was. And Football Australia's revived that for matches between Australia and New Zealand. But yeah, look, the Rugby League Ashes are a genuine thing. When I was a little boy growing up in Sydney, the tests between Australia and Great Britain, as Eddie Waring used to call it back in the day, they were red hot. I mean, you know, the Liverpool kiss. When Cliff Watson smashed Jim Morgan's face. Apparently, I mean, these things are all apocryphal and mythological and so on, but apparently Jim Morgan tried to do it to Cliff Watson first in this test match in Brisbane. And Cliff Watson said, I'll show you how to do it properly, and did. And Morgan finished the match with blood all over his face, his nose bent in all sorts of different directions that Mother Nature never intended. And so they were red hot. And this test apparently, well, not apparently, it was hard fought. England, as it's now known, tackled like demons for a lot of the match, but just didn't have the skill in the finish to score the tries that would win the match. But Peter Volandis has been pumping up. This is the other side of Reece Walsh. Peter Volandis has been talking him up as the rugby league version of LeBron James, who can take the sport to the world as well. So that's another reason why this other business about him switching to rugby union, or this recognition that he could be a global entity, a global athlete, I guess you'd have to say, is also out there at the moment. But, of course, 14-4, and then in the women's game, when the Gillaroos beat New Zealand, it was only a few points as well. It was hardly the expensive stuff that would but excite America or anyone like that. And particularly as the United States rugby team.
Tell Volandis he's dreaming.
Yes. Yes, Daryl Kerrigan's name has come up a few times when talking about...
Speaking of the proper Ashes, that is the cricket, Marnus Labuschagne has to be selected, doesn't he?
Oh, undoubtedly, five centuries in what this damp thing. I mean, it's not even officially summer yet. This is the latest. I mean, it's really been a case of white ball, red ball, hit ball. I mean, he's just been extraordinary. Look, in his own mind, Marnus is a champion, and champions get up when they can't. it says everything about him that not only is he scoring runs at the moment, he's taking wickets. And you can just imagine Marnus wandering into a change room saying, why do we need Cameron Green? Why do we need Bo Webster? I can do it all. And look, you know, there's an extraordinary level of enthusiasm in the way he bowls, but he did get two wickets in that one-day game against New South Wales. And as soon as we mention New South Wales, everyone says, how did Sam Constance go? He scored 47 from 74 balls, just three fours. I think he was trying to play some sort of responsible innings. But Marnus has got kind words for him. You know, he's got an opinion on everything, Marnus, and he says, look, this man's got great talent, and eventually it'll all shine
through.
He's
only young, let him come good. Just finally, by the way, the AFLW finals.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. North Melbourne cleared out on the Mob a while ago, undefeated right throughout. But there's an interesting player in for Melbourne. Interesting in a number of reasons, one of which she's come out this week already and stirred the possum, if I can use that term a bit, by saying, well, yes, North Melbourne did go undefeated. The Roos are the minor premiers and so on, but have they really been tested? And they haven't played us being Melbourne, who finished second. Now, that's leading with your chin a fair bit. You've got to be pretty good if you do that. But when you have a look at this Sarah Taylor, boy, is she pretty good already at a very tender age. She's played in the WNBL. She's got a degree in fine arts. She's won scholarships and prizes for her writing, for her poetry. She's worked as a model. She's an extraordinarily gifted, all-round human being, you'd have to say. So she may know exactly what she's talking about. And it's just someone to keep an eye on. The good thing about the AFLW is from here, it's going to get more and more watchable. As we know, that some of the games this year haven't been that. This jump to 16, you know, to a full 18 teams and all those other things just hasn't worked as well as the AFL would have liked. But now that it's the top eight teams, I think some, and particularly Brisbane against, when they finally get to play each other, Brisbane against Melbourne, actually, it's Brisbane and Hawthorn this weekend. It's North Melbourne and Hawthorn this weekend because Hawthorn came in fourth. And, you know, there's $1 million up for grabs right now for Brisbane because of the AFL's decision a couple of years ago to add to the McClellan Trophy for the minor premiers $1 million prize money. And lest we forget, no one has, Brisbane won the men's AFL grand final. And at the moment, they've won their last seven games. They've come from nowhere to finish third. They're well and truly in the running for this $1 million as well. So, you know, that's quite a few players or quite a few facilities
exactly.
to make sure they stay as the number one football. City in the nation.
In the nation, exactly.
Brings us straight back to Reece Walsh, Tamika Upton, all the great Brisbane rugby league players, male and female.
Yep. All right, Warwick. Let's refill the beers and continue talking at a later stage.
I can tell you there'll be beers, tears, champagne. This cup night in Melbourne, particularly for the connections and particularly for the trainers and all those other people, it's a big night. There are a couple of venues which will be filled to overflowing with people celebrating their wins, and somewhere else in the city there'll be a lot of people commiserating. And as my father used to say to me, when you go to the races, Warwick, see who goes home in the Mercedes and see who goes home on the tram. And and it's a lesson in life for
you. It's a lesson in life. All right, Warwick. Talk next week. See ya.
Good idea, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.